it's not just about is my team diverse, although it's very important, and is my team inclusive, is my team psychologically safe, but how then we create products and services, because then they go into society and they either create, like, they either support existing shitty structures or we change them.
Hey, and welcome to Product Journeys. I'm Fran Gleisner.
And I'm Lachlan Robertson. We're both product managers stumbling our way through our product journeys. We're out to meet amazing product people and learn a bit more about their skills and experiences.
And today we've got something a little bit different with Elena Ashimbayeva. Elena is a co-founder of Storio, a platform that shares the journeys of women and gender diverse people in Aotearoa. With over 170 stories in the bag, Elena does a lot of advocacy work around diversity, equity, inclusion, and storytelling. She works as an experienced designer in the health sector with a background in product and strategy. Combining her experience in the tech sector and passion for equity work, she recently launched an equitable product cohort course alongside four other kick-ass facilitators. Awesome, Elena. Welcome. It is so nice to have you. So I will hand over to you to tell us your journey of how you got to where you are today.
Thank you so much. Hello. Yeah, so I'm from Kazakhstan originally. It's in Central Asia. It's a really big country that not many people know about. I have been in Tamaki Makaurau for 12 years now. And actually, my background a little bit, and the reason why I came to New Zealand was to study biomedical sciences. So I did my degree in biomed and I worked in the cancer and immunology research for a little bit. So very not producty, a very different background. And the idea for that was, you know, the classic migrant dream to come to a different country, study something, and then bring my family over. And the reason behind biomed was very much aligned with, like, contribution was my biggest thing. I just wanted to contribute back. I think I was 16 when I came to New Zealand. I thought science and medicine were the only ways to do that. So I went with that, went with the biomedical pathway. And probably up until I graduated and worked for, like, a little bit, I didn't even know really much about tech or anything, like, outside of science, really. I just was really set on, like, I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be in a lab doing experiments, curing cancer one day, fingers crossed. And probably like a year into my work, I remember thinking, oh man, like, this is, I love it and I love science, but it felt maybe like not fully like me in terms of the vibe, I guess, of the, like, it was quite, you know, you're by yourself a lot and you're doing the same kind of thing over and over for a long time. Like, people don't tell you in science how you have to spend 20 years doing, like, pretty much the same stuff until something hopefully works. So I had this, like, funny little thing. My friend, I remember at Christmas party, said, hey, there's this coding course on Udemy and it's for $10 because it's a special for Christmas. Everyone should do it. And I was like, oh, I don't know anything about coding or tech. So in between my experiments, I would have like 5-10 minutes breaks. And I usually would just scroll through my phone and be on Instagram or something. And I was like, way better use of my time is to do some learning. So yeah, that's kind of how I got to know a little bit more about tech and suddenly, like, started going to conferences and events. Webstock was one of my first conferences. It was great. I got a free ticket by accident from a friend, you know, all this, like, little coincidences. And then I was like, oh, wow, people in tech actually do some cool shit. You know, it's like you can still contribute and you can still do some, like, transformative social change in the sector. And yeah, that's kind of how my journey unraveled, really.
The moving out of the lab is what I'm hearing into offices. What was your first step into an actual role there? What did you start with?
Yeah. You know, I have quite a windy, random journey because I'm only 29, but I've worked in like six places, like a year and a half, and every place was quite different. But I actually work for Ernst & Young in health and strategy as a consultant. So that was my first role. I did some like little gigs here and there, but that was like from the lab. I applied for a grad role and they wanted people from different backgrounds, and they wanted people from like biomed and research and sciences. We have such a breadth and width of experiences and knowledge. There was a health team, so I worked mainly with government clients. But when I joined, I was like determined to just go through and like work on as many projects as I can. So I worked in robotic process automation, which is again very random in left field. I worked for with government projects. I did some audits. Not my cup of tea. It was really stressful, but it was really, really awesome. Like it was such a difference, you know, going from a lab wearing a lab coat to like going to a Britomart Auckland Tower of Ernst & Young when everyone wears suits and, you know, there's corporate lingo and you have a gym in your building, like just for people who work at Ernst & Young.
Crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, from science, we're like scrambling with resources. It was quite a different hit. So it was exciting. It was different. A lot of my friends who did biomed were afraid that this is the only thing that they know and that it won't be useful anywhere else. And I was like, no, I promise. There's so many awesome avenues. Like we can do so many things. And so that kind of set me up. After that, I had my first product role with a startup on music education called Melodics. I did some contracting for them doing UX research, and they were looking for their first product person because they didn't have anyone, and the CEO was performing that role. And I was like, can I apply? And they were like, what? Are you sure? You're interested? I'm like, yeah, I love your team. And that was my product kind of more defined journey started there.
Amazing. I'm also hearing the lab, as you say, working by yourself and not having much diversity, you kind of dived into this world of consulting. It's incredibly diverse. And then just from there, it looks like you've gone through just such a range of roles. What's been the thread then, or how have you picked these different roles?
Yeah, good question. I think, again, like the whole contribution and community were still probably my main values at a time, still are now for sure. And a lot of the decisions that kind of were made, to be honest, like when I went to work for Ernst & Young, because it was a health strategy team, that's why I was like community contribution. Still, I did leave Ernst & Young because I was like, okay, it's way more about profits. And yeah. When I was 21, so I guess like a bit maybe naively also learning lessons around the drivers behind some of the companies and how, like, what's marketed and what's not. Although, again, people that I worked with were amazing. The health strategy team partner was the one who hired Ashley Bloomfield. So our partner used to work with the ministry, and so he was the one who hired Ashley Bloomfield. And I'm like, so, you know, some really cool people who worked in the ministry and the health.
Great hire.
Exactly. To learn from them was really wonderful. And I think, again, like, music education was more... it was education, and the community still part was there, but those two probably were like the least connected in terms of like direct impact, social impact. And after that was mostly government and like social organizations and my own stuff that is more like definitely socially driven.
And so I guess like in your current setting, you mentioned you wear a few different hats, right? Mm-hmm. How do you juggle that?
Yeah, I 2 years ago, so I think I was like maybe during the pandemic, I switched roles from, I went from Melodics from the startup to work for a government tech company in product management role. And I loved it. I loved actually every place I've been to, I loved product. Like I think once I got into a role, I'm like, okay, all the things that I love this. This is great. And probably a year and a half in my role, I wanted to go back and study a little bit. It was just a random decision, that no real like need for it in terms of career progression or whatever. So I did my degree in human rights. And as I was doing that, I was working. So I was working full time. I was studying full time actually as well. And my job was nice to give me some like leave during the lecture time to go away. And then also I was running Storio, and I was kind of juggling. At the time I was thinking, it's fine, I'm managing all of it. And then I decided to actually take 6 months off and just finish uni. That was actually quite beautiful to, you know, combat a lot of narratives around like deriving value from work or like personal worth, I guess, because people suddenly, everyone's asking, what's the next step? Or what are you doing? Or how are you going to, you know, whatever, whatever. And it was interesting to be like, no, I made the decision. I need to finish studying. This is how it was going to be. when I come back to work again, I came back as an experienced designer to work for Auckland Hospital. But I came back with a, I think, realizing that actually I would love more balance in my life. So I asked for a part-time role. So I'm working 3.5 days a week. And that was quite a nice transition. So I'm 3.5 days a week in the hospital, and then I can do my own Storio and a bunch of other work and a bunch of other boards and stuff that none of that. Well, recently I started making a little bit of money from that other stuff, but it was never the intent, and it's still not an intent. So in that sense, it was really nice to say, actually, the work is really much contribution driven, and it also pays, but then also I can do my other stuff and it doesn't need to pay, which is very lucky. I feel really grateful and just so wonderful to have that opportunity.
It's fascinating you talk about work tied up with personal worth as well, because I feel like often, I mean, for example, the role title, if in Western culture, it's the first thing you ask is, what do you do? Product manager. For me, I always feel like that is in itself kind of tied up with pigeonholing people or...
Yeah. And, you know, we're just talking at work about this today. When it comes to the concept of, so in Maori, in Te Ao, like the relationship building space, which we do a lot of when we are so good in the hospital work, like it's a lot of personal connection with people, right? So when you meet someone, maybe as part of a user interview, so it doesn't have to be personal relationships, it can be like work relationships. You have to have this time to establish connection. And you can just so see, you know, I got so much better with that, because I feel like before, when people say introduce yourself, you say, hi, I'm Alina, I'm a product manager for X company. And maybe like, oh yeah, and I do this thing. And you get into spaces here in the hospital with lots of Indigenous folks and Maori and Pacifica folks. And they start with like, I'm from there and I have kids and I have family and this is where I love and this is where I live and this is where I've traveled. And it's so much more, you know, you're like, that's right, we're not our titles. And so it's kind of nice to have that mindset and like introduce yourselves from your maybe place of birth or your family or friends connection or whatever. Yeah. But you know, we live in the capitalist world where it's driven mostly by titles. So it's, sometimes it's going to be hard. We have to like unlearn it ourselves bit by bit.
It's very true. Yeah. Although I'm really interested, Kazakhstan, has your background influenced that as well? Or have you found coming to New Zealand like that's, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's the country that doesn't really have many, like, people can't really stereotype pigeonhole you because they don't know much about the country or the region itself. I guess also my mom is Russian and my dad is Kazakh, both from Kazakhstan. And so I'm like sort of Asian, I guess, mixed with Russian. I speak Russian as my first language. And I was 16 when I came here. So in that sense, I feel like, you know, I'm still a teenager and kind of got had a chance to be influenced more and ingrained more in this culture here. But I do love, it's funny, I feel not too connected to my culture, even though a lot of my work is around, like, you know, when it comes to equity and ethics, it's about, or storytelling, it's about people's experiences, people's connections, people's identities, like us providing opportunities for different identities. And yet I'm probably not as connected to my own culture. So it's been an interesting journey with that, mainly because, again, I was a kid when I left, and for lots of migrants, I feel like they have the same. It's like when you leave a country that you, is your mother country and you love it, but you also see lots of problems back home that happen. It's an interesting journey to navigate. So I feel like it influences all of my work, really, right? But it's something I don't really maybe talk about as much.
So putting up there, like, love to hear a bit more about like the role in the hospital, like, when we talk about from that contribution lens, like, what are you trying to achieve with the stuff you're doing there? What's the value add?
Yeah, what's the value add? Such a product term. So the role is interesting because I wasn't looking when I was still finishing my uni and doing my own stuff for you. And I did some. So I also do allyship training. So like helping companies with allyship skills, like it's called Our Skills New Zealand, and so I'm one of the facilitators, there's three of us, and then also my equity and diversity sort of supporting corporate or people who work in tech to think more equitably in how they develop products or manage products. And so when I was looking, so I wasn't looking for a role, but I knew I wanted to do something in that manner. And one of my best friends, Sav, she works currently in the design team at the hospital. And so she posted a job on Slack in the woman in tech community, woman non-binary tech community. And I was like, oh, Sav, I didn't know you have a role in your thing. And she's like, oh, would you be interested? I didn't know you were looking. And I'm like, maybe if I get to work with you. And so the role experience design, I was like, I don't know really what that means. Same as I didn't know what product management was before I became a product manager. And so the role is kind of, I guess, I think it's very similar to product management. It's sort of like a service design, but the idea is that we employ design thinking, human-centered design to address whatever problems there might be in the hospital, which could be product, so tech stuff, could be hardware, could be software, could be services, can be a form, you know, whatever that is. And so when I was hired, we were working on a project, specifically in one of the communities in Auckland that needed support around improving health outcomes. And they kind of knew what they wanted to do, but didn't really. Well, they did, but they wanted more direction. And so we were on this particular project that I was on probably for like 8 months. And my projects now are very similar. It's a lot about like the initial research, like figuring out being like, what actually is needed in the community? Like, what is the problem? You know, what are we trying to solve? What are we trying to build? And it's quite, I find, both like now being a product manager in tech and experience designer in the government, I'm like, oh, they both can learn so much from each other. I wish we talked more, but they don't, because it's such a, like, I love the idea how in product you have a person, a product manager, who stays with the product and like looks after it forever. Like there is, you know, you are on the whole cycle. You are not just like, yeah, we build it, thanks, goodbye. Which is, that's kind of happens in government a lot. They were like, let's put a team together to build a service or a product. Okay, and then it sort of should somehow be good forever. But that doesn't happen like that. So I love the idea. So I keep saying, like, we should have a product manager for the service. We should have a product person for this. Like, what is a product? It doesn't have to be product, like, you know, service person.
But someone person. To steward it or own it. Yeah.
Correct. Sure. Yeah. And this person doesn't need to be, because usually clinicians get tasks for that. They're like, hey, well, now you are in charge. But they have so much on the plate. And sometimes they won't even understand, like, some of the aspects of, like, you know, should we improve the cultural side of it or data side of it or whatever side of it. They are like literally saving people's lives on the front lines. So having someone sort of looking after, yeah, shepherding the service or product. Not some services do have that, of course, but I just think could be done more. Equally in the design world, we think so much around like experience of people, like how people, like, why are we solving this? Should we even build this? Is this the right thing? And I feel like product and tech world sometimes lacks that mindset. We're sort of like feature factory, let's get out and build more stuff and sell more stuff without like enough thinking about communities. I love the balance.
Yeah, and it's like, it's interesting sort of for me how you're describing that. A lot of the times people come at something with a pre-canned solution, right? An idea of, I want to build this thing, now I gotta go find where to put it, versus what I'm hearing from you is it's all about not just the initial experience of the user, but even bigger than that, like that wider community factor, like how does it actually make the world better in a way, right?
I'd
love to hear about, like, how do you actually approach that in a practical setting? What are things to think about?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, it's a bit different. I'm thinking the context is quite different, right? So you're trying to sell a product, right? So you are working with users to make it suitable for their needs, whether it's in government and in service and in social innovation, you are figuring out how to change people's behaviors or create more social good. That's the right word to use. And so obviously in that sense, you're not trying to sell specifically anything to people, but you're really trying to like gain trust and work with communities to like really be like, why? Like, it's interesting balance of power, right? Because you employed by the government, you get paid for this work you do. And you are sitting there being like, trust me, I'm going to build something for you. And usually in social sector and government, people have been burned by government or burned by, you know, I mean, think about, you know, our Maori communities, obviously what happened in New Zealand, colonization and everything, like what has happened. So there's so much needs to be repaired to even begin this work. So it feels way more complex and way more like just so many intertwined things. And interesting, I will say that now, which kind of counteracts my role in the government, is that I love the idea of grassroots, like small community solutions. I think sometimes when we try to make something really big and like, let's do this huge thing that works for everyone, we kind of miss the mark. So I love the idea that people start, you know, like their own pod, like start their own podcast or start like, let's do this thing for our small community that maybe will grow, but doesn't need to. Like, I think it's really cool to be like, it doesn't need to become worldwide. It's cool if it does, and we will see if we want to take it that way. But a lot of like solutions that I see as like a product person background or experience designer that work as someone from a school, because they're really passionate about something, decided to like, you know what, the government is taking too long and it's too much whatever effort, too much bureaucracy, I'm just gonna go and train how to do this thing and go to 3 schools in my area and just be like, hey, 3 schools, what if we did it this way? And the schools are like, yes. And that's what they do. And it suits for this community, for this particular group of people, great. And sometimes when the government comes in like, let's scale this, it kind of falls apart. So it's interesting because, you know, you want to scale things, but small scale solutions that are made in the community work really well. I don't know if that's much relates to product world, though. Product feels way more like we need to scale this.
But interestingly, I love that comparison, because when I think about product is so much, they kind of do everything, you know, and if you do everything, you don't do it well. And actually that focus, I think, is so important for any organization and government as well. Like, so much government can do, but actually if they try to do everything, it's probably not going to change behavior or get the outcomes they want. So if you're able to kind of focus them in on some, you know, really understanding the problem. And I'm interested, discovery is such an important thing. We talk about it quite a lot. Is that something you do a lot of?
We're mostly in discovery forever.
Awesome.
on different projects, mainly because I think the value of design and product thinking isn't really yet too mainstream. And like, especially government, I don't know, I guess tech companies, right, are like based literally on product, although there are still some like sort of waterfall engineering driven companies out there, but it's way more progress towards product thinking rather than in government. It's still very much like, and I can see why, it's just harder. You're constantly putting down fires, you know, in the health system. You can't, like, it's just, you know, during lockdowns and COVID, we were like, our team was like, hey, let's talk about innovation. They're like, shut up, we're on fire. The health system is on fire. And unfortunately, if you don't think about future stuff, you will always be on fire, right? Like, that's an interesting balance. But yeah, we are mostly where people are seeing design thinking, I guess, benefits as discovery, like bringing us in and being like, hey, we want to solve this. Is this the right thing? Or like, what should we even do? Like, at the moment, working on the project where we are sort of saying, hey, actually, let's have a look into what the actual problem is. Like, yes, you have all these ideas. Everyone has all these ideas to what they want to build and solve, but like, why? Because we need to measure where we're going. So we're coming in, a bunch of us, and being like, people have done research before. Let's just look at the research together and like define problem a bit better. Or problems, it's usually problems, many, many problems. So we are helping projects mostly in that stage of work, which I guess is quite different. I do miss product world, but it's a bit more like, you know, I work with some really awesome engineers, and sometimes I'll be like, wouldn't it be cool if we like just made this thing? And engineers are like, I can see that. Okay, whole color. And then like in a few days, they're like, Alina, we just built it. I'm like, what? They're like, we just built it. I'm like, oh, it's so cool. And you like just go in and test it, and it just works and it's great. Like, I kind of miss that a little bit of just, you know, randomly like fast turnaround of building things and releasing them and seeing them being used. Quite fun.
That's not a huge part of the process at the moment. Like, I guess I'm just thinking a part of that discovery is the actual validation of the ideas as well, right? So that's maturing, I guess.
Yeah. Yes and no, yeah, to be honest. And again, that's very limited experience, of course, just my personal experience is that because there's been so much usually in government history of engagement with communities and discovery, like engagement with people around what needs to be solved, you're being really cautious of like actually putting something out there that might not have a proper commitment behind it. So, you know, like, you know, in tech, you might be like, oh, yeah, let's release this feature. We will support it. We have custom support that will just take it on, you know, or we will just discontinue it if it doesn't work. You can't really do that when it comes to like big social change stuff, because again, people already have some mistrust in you. I mean, I don't know if for either of you, if anyone who's listening, like if you had to use the health system, like there's some brilliant, wonderful, caring people there, but also it's freaking tough. Like the wait times, the, oh, just like the access, the so many things, right? So you can't just like slap something there and hope it works if there isn't like a proper commitment behind it. If tomorrow we put it together and we say, hey, everyone, we're doing this thing, and they're like, yay. And then, you know, the person who looks after funding comes back and like saying, ah, jokes, we removed funding for it tomorrow. You'll be like, oh my God, the community will be like, they won't like you. So you don't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, figuring out, I'm learning how to navigate that. I don't know exactly yet how to, you know, what's the right. Yeah.
Well, you almost gave yourself the answer before, the grassroots thing. That's what I was thinking about. It's like, if you can get people in the hospitals or whoever's, you know, at the coalface that are having the problem, to start creating their own ideas. It's like, great. I've just shown you where the problems are and pointed out the things that you may doing.
Yeah, we're actually piloting an innovation incubator for medtech ideas in the hospital at the moment. We're launching, like our team is launching a pilot for an incubator to help clinicians who had ideas around like, and just went ahead and did something. They were like, come to this little 3 months program. It will help you make this thing a bit more of a reality.
So you're really passionate about ethics and equality. Can you put your product lens on and explain maybe how to think about ethics and equality as a product manager, maybe, and how we could bring it into our work?
Yeah, for sure. So I use ethics and equity lens, which I'm like a little bit different, I guess. Oh, it's a little bit different in terms of, I guess, for in technology sector. A lot of the times when we develop something, and that was me just through learning, like I just did it and then I was learning as I was going, and I was like, oh wait, I'm making all these mistakes. We assume a lot of the times that technology is neutral, or that we are solving, like we are giving people what they want. And by people, we mean our customers. And it becomes a bit more like homogenous group of people who have the homogenous needs. And these days, the words like, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, they sort of become buzzwords a little bit. So how do we make them more real? For me, example was when I was working with musical education startup, we were looking at, I was doing all the user research in the company. So I would interview all the people. And I was like, huh, how come, like I've interviewed like 90 people so far, and how come they're all men? Like, is it just an accident? Like, what happened? And people are like, oh, well, it's because electronic music, just men are mostly interested. And I was like, is that true? And so going back and being like, well, historically, how come there's been some barriers for women? Like literally even now, like there's so many barriers for women to get into orchestras, to get into music education. There's been a lot of like, you know, not as far as like 50, 60 years ago, like people weren't allowed to, you know, there's so many things that existed. And so, yeah, our company, our startup didn't create those things, but we now live in a system that had that history. So, okay, well, how do we want to act within the system? Do we want to promote more musicians and like reach out to more, maybe support communities of like young schools who work with maybe students who are gender diverse or women, you know, girls from schools to help them with music? So like what role do we play? And then kind of deeper is like, well, as a product manager, I want to make decisions around what kind of data I collect, what kind of features we release, marketing, language we use. What am I going to do? Am I going to make it suitable for my current user or for people, you know, current user who are all men? Or do I want to make it suitable for people who I think we should have as users? So you started doing that, the language you use, the pictures you use, the even cartoons you create, you know? And then if we go past gender, we can go into, okay, well, disabilities. For example, our app relied fully on color differentiation when you're playing music instruments, and the app tells you whether you're doing good or bad. It's, you know, using the colors. And people reached out to us and being like, hey, I really love your app, but I'm colorblind and I can't see anything. So we're like, oh, wait, whoa, duh, of course, we just didn't even think about it. So putting together things in place, being like, okay, if people, what if people only have one limb and they can never pass our courses and levels because we rely on people to constantly hit, like drums, for example. Okay, well, maybe we create some lessons that are specifically for people who you don't need to have two limbs to play. So things like that, you know, it's kind of like, I guess, just, it's not just about, is my team diverse, although it's very important, and is my team inclusive, is my team psychologically safe, is my team being whatever, but how then we create products and services, because then they go into society and they either create, like they either support existing shitty structures that were built before us that were sexist or racist, or we change them. And I think most people would probably want to be on the part of history that changes that.
So is your advice for companies to just be conscious about that and think about it? Or is there something more than that they can
yeah. do? Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, as part of my work, I was doing this kind of like storytelling talks. And then a friend of mine who was he a VP or CPO? I don't know what his role was, product lead, whatever, product head of product in the company. He was like, hey, can you come and talk to my product managers about this stuff? And I did a talk and it was really good. And people were like, oh, what can we do more? And so Collab, which is a product management cohort, reached out to me being like, hey, Alina, what if we did a whole course on that? And so we launched a course last year. And we're currently in the middle of a second one, working with product managers and engineers and designers, being like, what are the... I think a big part of Loki is awareness. Like, how do I reflect? Because it's not something that comes, you know, like I didn't, right? Even though like I can say I'm a migrant, I'm a woman of color, I don't speak English as my first language, I didn't come from wealth, yet I still have all this like disabilities. I didn't know anything about that or whatever else. So it's part of it is being aware, but then also what can I put in place? Like maybe it's a checklist, maybe it's a practice, or maybe it's a once a week we get together with a team and we do a little exercise together when we look through our requirements, the way we write them. You know, it's definitely shouldn't end on awareness. It should go into, I'll put something in place. So when I leave, whoever picks it up, we'll have something in place that they'll be like, oh yeah, well, let's practice now. That's what we do now. You know, we always check if our website is accessible, or we always check that our imagery that we use isn't utilizing, you know, thin, white, pretty people. You know, we're using diverse folks. Yeah, so stuff like that.
That's great. I mean, it starts with awareness, right? I guess I'm just thinking about those kind of communities as well, but being able to talk to people and as you say, like actually finding out what your users need and having those conversations and, you know, learning about them and being curious, because you may not have all the answers to start with, but asking the questions and wanting to find those things out is the best place to start.
Yeah, 100%. And no, it's, I think the way we talk about it can be quite heavy, and I can see if people want to disengage because it's quite scary. What if I get something wrong? I don't know enough, or I don't know what's my place. And I think it's like, for me, the journey has been challenging, but also really enriching. Like when you get to know communities, the way different people communicate, different people do, it's just like, you're like, whoa, the world is so diverse and cool and different. And my, you know, personal experience, like it doesn't need to be all about like let's sit and listen on some of really heavy. For example, we actually had an exercise where people reflected, like brought something that is really personal to them, and a person who led the module was indigenous, like she's Pacifica, so we talked about like indigenous practices of, so something that's really important to you, something that's like a treasure. And so everyone brought a little thing for them, which could be like a photo of my family, it could be people had like a tattoo of my dog, you know, whatever it is. And sharing that with each other is part of learning. And you'd be like, oh, okay. It's not just me sitting in the lecture being like pounded by like really just heavy stuff that I don't, and I feel uncomfortable and I feel like I don't know anything. It actually can be quite beautiful for you as a person. So suddenly on the course, we're like talking and sharing stuff. And I'm like, look, this is what people can do when they do focus groups or user testing or whatever. And people are like, oh, okay, beautiful. Listen, you know, so. Yeah, it's a conversation, and all of us are learning, right? None of us are experts, which kind of helps.
I just love the idea of actually being conscious and thinking about it. And as you sort of touched on before, moving past just the classical corporate, we might need to maximize profit lens. And we talked to someone else before about like B corporations, like corporations for benefit of the world, and bringing that into the way that you think about building products and experiences. So that's awesome. I love it. Maybe 2 minutes, whip through some rapid fire questions.
Alrighty. I think this is one of my favorite parts. So we're going to do rapid fires.
I'm not prepared. So I hope something good comes out. Okay.
Whatever comes out will be great. Do you have a book or an article that you would like to recommend reading?
I do. It's called, I'll be topical to my previous conversation. It's called Design Justice by... Okay, I do have a book with me somewhere. I don't, but can we include it somewhere in the links? It's a great book.
Yeah, we'll have some notes at the end. So yeah.
By a wonderful trans woman who talks about how to build technology and AI in a more like just way. Great read. I loved it. I'm still reading it because I'm like, oh, incredible.
Yeah, that sounds really awesome. Do you have a favorite podcast you listen to?
I mostly listen to my friends' podcasts. One is called Asian in Aotearoa. And it's my number one on my Spotify podcast. I was interviewed on it and then I started listening to it. It's just New Zealand, Asian New Zealanders. Really great host, really great podcast.
Amazing. There's, yeah, not really heard that one at all. So what are you most grateful for?
Oh, there is like an answer in life. And then at the moment for this conversation, I feel like I haven't, usually I'm the one who interviews people, so it's really nice to be asked questions and talking about some of my reflecting on my own journey. So just grateful for you folks. Yeah.
Very kind. Thanks. Final one. Do you have a call to action or a key takeaway that you'd like to share?
Yeah. I think just if we think again back to the equity and justice work in product, I think product managers have so much power that we can use for good. And so engaging in that journey, whether it's, you know, reading the book that I just suggested, or just like reaching out to me and chatting about the stuff, just Googling, whatever that looks like, but just getting on the journey it'll be so powerful. Cause I feel like people in product have like incredible amount of influence and power to do really wonderful things in the tech world. So I hope we can use it for good.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing perspective that we haven't explored before. So,
oh, thank you so much, folks. I hope it wasn't too all over the place. I was like kind of talking about random stuff, but I was just like got excited. Again, I usually the one who interview people, so I'm like, oh, I can talk about myself.
No, it was great.